listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very special friend, a friend that I went to middle school with, went to high school with, and you know what? She's a very talented actress and a singer. Most people don't know that you still sing. I know you still sing. Miss Jen Van Epps. How are you, Jen? How are you?
And how are you?
Your sweater
body. I can't believe it. Thank you. That's my friend. I'm trying to get you centered so I can look you right in the eyes.
There you go. See?
Hold on. I want to look you right in the eyes, baby. There it is. Oh, wait. There we go. There you are. Okay. I'm great. We actually went to high school and I went to USC as well.
That's right. You know, I was going to commit to USC and say USC, but I was like, I think she went to USC and I didn't want to say
I did.
But I remember, did you study theater there?
I didn't. Long journey. When I first left, it's true. I did sing. When I first left high school, I studied vocal music performance at a small collegiate religious school that just was not for me. So I ended up leaving, made great friends, took my friends and left, and then ended up studying mass communications. And I did do some theater and singing there. I know. And here I am now. Doing, I think, what I was always destined to do.
Well, you know what's so cool? And it's like, you know, Brian Jordan Alvarez has been a guest. And when I saw you two in the same movie, I was like, this is so crazy. Like, worlds colliding.
That's my boo.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's the best.
He was on our show when he was just doing the minute clips. And it was like, these are so good. You're.
I know.
And like now he's got his own show and he's.
He did I know.
It's awesome. So
I'm so proud of him.
You're both thriving and living the
Thank
dream.
You.
But let's go back. You know, I know you were singing. Let's go back to the.
Yes.
Way back. What was the moment of Zen that you fell in love with music and movies?
Ooh. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I've told this anecdote before, but I'll. Say it again, because why not? The first time I was on stage where I guess I kind of realized, oh, maybe there's something to this. I was five. Oh, no. Yeah, I was five. And it was like the kindergarten play. And it was Goldilocks and the Three Bears. And for some reason, it was also a musical. I have no idea. I don't remember anything except for, I don't know. Somebody wrote it. Mrs. Threlkeld, possibly. Shout out to Mrs. Threlkeld. And so they needed a kid that could sing too for Goldilocks. Well, clearly I am not the phenotype for Goldilocks, but apparently I was the only kid that could sing. So yeah, so I snagged Goldilocks, and that was the first moment of like, oh, maybe there's something to this. Now, the real moment that made me realize I really, really wanted to like perform. And what I loved about it was connecting was actually senior year in high school. We went to Arcadia High School. That's shout right. out Apaches.
Yeah.
That's right. And we were both in Chanteurs. Woo-hoo!
Show
choir kids. Big old show choir kids. And I was a senior soloist. You were obviously gone. But I was a senior soloist. And I was singing Your Daddy's Son from Ragtime. Now, I'm 18. At this point, I hadn't even had sex. I've never been pregnant. I've never been left by a man or jilted. But... I was singing this song and I look down and I see this woman crying, not someone I know.
Right.
And that was the moment where it was like very impactful. Like, I'm like, wow, your art and your expression can actually reach in and make someone feel something. Like, it's wickedly delicious in so certain ways, you know? And I just kind of fell in love with that idea
was that
of connecting.
Were you doing May Show when that happened?
Yes.
I had a moment like that with Mae Sho too. I don't know did who it was, but I sang a song from Miss Saigon, and some lady,
yeah,
it was in tears, and she was like, "Your performance just moved me so much." And like, you don't think that those people will be an impact on your life because you're
that's right.
I don't know this lady, and then years
exactly.
later, think, my God, I didn't know that lady, and yet I still
that's moved. Right.
So I can understand and completely relate to that. That must have been a very powerful moment. Because you were just
so
like,
powerful.
I love art, but I'm not thinking this is a full-time thing. And then somebody you move, you realize,
yeah,
I can move people with this. This is a connection. It's beyond just art.
Beyond
just being on the stage. It's like a communication. And
yes.
Erratically, you were studying communications.
How did you
do that while you knew that this was slowly brooding?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because actually my mom, so I was just home a couple months ago, New York, and then LA to do Megan 2.0 premiere and press and whatever. And my mom pulls out the year six. I'm living in New Zealand, so I'm like, oh, what do I say? Sixth grade, that's the word, because they say year whatever. Oh my God, you guys. Okay, sixth grade yearbook. I went to Baldwin Stalker, shout out to Bulldogs. Ooh. And she goes, look what you wrote. And I'm like, I literally thought I wrote, I don't remember. I thought I wrote I wanted to be a lawyer. But no, I wrote, in 2012, I will be an actor. I don't remember exactly what it was kind of crazy. Like, I will be an actor on TV show, something. I don't know, something to that flavor. And I was actually really struck by that because I guess I've always known that, but because of fear and reservation and lack of self-confidence, it took me till almost 40 to have Megan and to have other work I've done. But it's always been bubbling inside, even while doing mass communications, which actually I think helped to fuel my art because I did some interesting classes with my favorite professor and one of my mentors, Chris Smith, rest in peace. Who also married me. I did a class called Hip Hop Nation. I did a class called Race and Ethnicity in the Media. And that just started to get my brain to percolate and think about my life in a different way. I think I love growing up in Arcadia, but I think it's quite a sheltered life.
Yeah, it's homogenous. It's definitely homogenous.
It's very homogenous. Yeah. And when you're not a part of that, you try and be a part of that. Anyway, So I think being in the mass communications track really did get my brain to start thinking about other stuff. Also, Sarah, what's her last name? Anyway, I did like some women's studies class. I don't know, but I think it's important to fuel your life and fill your life with stuff that's not just art, thinking about social issues and the greater context of in which we create art, you know?
Yep.
Like for Megan, like AI, we're grappling with stuff that's beyond just like a funny doll running around. Anyway, sorry.
You know, what's interesting about this movie too, it's like, oh, ha ha ha, it's like a mechanical computerized doll that.
Exactly.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
this could happen in 5-10 years. You know, like this.
Right.
Not something that is completely as, you know, out, like far out as we think it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
You actually cemented a theory of mine. I have a secret theory that most people know
Tell
what they
more.
Want to do. I think they know what they want to do by the age of 12.
Yeah.
I think they won't admit it all the time, but I think kids know because it's like you have no filter. You don't really care about what the outside world thinks, but I think
inside
there's something going on where you're like, oh, I'm drawn to this. And age, you're like, yeah. So it's like the fact that you said that, and then it took you, you know, a couple decades to kind of really pursue it. When was that moment of Zen that you found, like, okay, I want to do this. This is it. I'm going to clear the path for this.
Oh, I mean, the thing is, so after the crazy thing is I started doing my earbud. Sorry, guys. I hope you can still hear me. My bad. Okay, great. So basically, when I left that first school that just was not a good fit for me. I went to PCC for 2 years. And in that time, not 2 years, excuse me, a year and a half, because I did actually finish university in four. And by the way, side note, so I went to this Christian college, thank you, in Westmont College. Everyone's like, did you get kicked out of the Christian college? I'm like, no, I did not. I self-removed.
You're like, I'm not this holy. I need to remove myself.
Yeah, for real. But I did not get kicked out. People are like, did they kick you out for doing something? I'm like, no, I was so straight edge. Anyway, sorry. So when I was at PCC, one of my really good friends, Timory, hi, darling, who I'm still good friends with, who was in Chantours. You know Timory.
Of course.
Yeah. So Timory was modeling at the time and wanted to transition into doing like more commercial or acting. And so she took me to the Daniel Hoff agency, which was my first agency, because she's like, oh, I don't want to go alone. And I asked if I could bring a friend. And they took me. Like, I wasn't planning on that. It was just for their commercial department. And they took me. And it was like, oh, I didn't mean for that to happen. Also, because they didn't end up taking her, but that's fine. Because I think that wasn't in her heart. I think she fell into acting. Like you said, I think it's sometimes you fall into things for various reasons. Anyway, that was like kind of the first taste of like professional performing, you know, commercial work. Everyone's like, oh, it's just a money job. But actually, you do gain a lot of skills of how to be on set and even character creation.
Did you bring headshots or anything to that meeting? Or it was just like,
no, raw dog. Wow. Nikki, I just showed up fresh as a daisy. And I think there was probably something really interesting about that. Like, oh, she was always acting, but she wasn't intending to come. Like, what's the deal? Because I was studying, actually, I was doing some film studies at PCC and then transitioned into communications when I went to USC. Probably out of fear, again, fear.
Yeah.
Because, okay, that's an easier pathway, right? To do mass communications as opposed to having to put together some sort of portfolio and get into the film department.
Right.
You know, I just didn't have the confidence that I could do that. Anyway, that was the first moment of like, oh, maybe something's here. And also back to high school, one of the craziest part is, you know how we had the superlatives, most likely to, best whatever.
Yeah.
And the one I got was most likely to become famous, you know?
Awesome.
I know, but it was kind of weird because I was like, thanks, guys. But I'm like, I don't know. Again, lack of self-confidence, right? Trying to find validation on the outside instead of on the inside. So back to that moment of I had struggled with serious anxiety and I kept like acting and doing stuff, but was bombing in like audition rooms because
those are not natural, by the way.
Those are not natural.
It's such a weird environment. So, I mean, of course, you should.
Such a weird environment.
The natural thing is to bomb in those rooms because they're not a natural experiment by any means.
They're not a natural. Commercials was fine, but once I started to do theatrical auditions, there was this little voice in the back of my head that was like, you're not enough. You didn't study acting. I mean, I've always studied and gone to classes, but I didn't go to conservatory, but there was this little voice that was like, you have to be perfect in your audition, right? But art isn't perfect. These are things I'm learning later. You have to be perfect. Part of that is, you know, I am half Chinese, half Black, and I think it's, you know, this idea of excelling and being excellent. So this idea of like perfection is required in order for you to succeed. But actually in art, it's not. Be messy.
Yeah, it's the illusion of, and even, I think social media is like that too. It's like, oh,
yes.
This is perfect. And it's like, no, actually, if you're really being a true artist, there's no filter. And it's like,
yeah.
I'll show you my mistakes because I've already proved to myself that I can do this. So there's no other
person
to prove it to. So
that's right.
You know, it's interesting to see that you kind of, I never knew that you had to deal with any of this anxiety. That's crazy.
And so art, I mean, it was bad.
They've been this release for you to channel some of that energy. And then you started obviously having more confidence and kind of rooms and auditions with a little bit more like, you know what? I belong here. Cause I know what that feels like to also be like, oh, I didn't do this. Cause I studied voice, but I never studied guitar and piano formally where it was like, oh, I feel like, oh, I can hang.
Yeah.
No, it's like, I can hang.
I just remember seeing House of Blues being like, Oh, shoot.
I miss that place so freaking much.
Is it gone?
It's gone. You know what? It'll trip you out. It's a giant hotel that they used Saudi Arabian oil money. It doesn't look like anything.
What? Else.
Yeah, it's, and they're trying to do that with the whole block. They're going to do that with the Viper.
Really?
Yes.
It's, no.
It's taking all this oil money and taking all the culture out of the Sunset Strip.
That's awful.
First one. And when you drive by it, you'll drive by it like four or five times thinking, oh, that's not it. Oh, that is it. You know, because
Yeah. It's
just a trip. It's so weird to see. So now what they're going to do is they're going to tear down the Viper Room. And they're going to put a
fake, not the Viper Room.
Tear it down, and they're going to put a fake Viper Room in there. That's like, and a recording studio, but it's like, it's going to be like a Vegas kind of vibe. It's going to be so.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's all right. It's what happens. You know, it's what happens.
I know.
Part of life. But I thank you for coming to our House of Blues shows because I love that venue. You know what's crazy is I was talking to the stage manager like about a couple weeks ago. I said, man, yes. There's something about that stage. That I've been on tons of stages my entire life.
Yeah. There's
something about that stage. And he said, you know, it's really weird. It must be the Mississippi mud that they had. What? He said, yeah. You know, I said, is that folklore? Is that legend? Or, and he's like, no, because they asked me, the corporate office asked me to go under the stage, and they had a metal box that was sealed with Mississippi mud from the
concrete.
Yeah, and I mean, I still got goosebumps when he told me that.
Was,
that's so cool. I just think that's so
deep. Awesome.
It's deep. And like, I saw James Brown play there. I've seen some legends play there. So for me, it's just like an amazing stage. But
yeah.
But let's make this about you, Jen. So.
But I love you. So, you know, you're just anyway, I don't know. Okay, well, hold on. I just want to say one thing. The confidence came because I had a breakdown. I had a breakdown in 2013, and I was having like a series of night terrors, and I just looked at myself and said, I cannot live like this anymore. And so I started therapy. And then when we moved to Seattle, my husband's a doctor, we had moved to Seattle for him to do his residency at UW. And because they offered free therapy, I was doing some in LA, like on a sliding scale. Cause again, I was working in restaurants, you know, doing the like actor thing. By the way, I loved service. I know a lot of people don't. I would still go do it. So if anyone wants to hire me for one day a week, I'll go do it.
Awesome.
I love it. Anyway, so then I was, when we moved to Seattle, I was able to do free therapy. You know, he's not making much money. I'm not working. And that changed my life because she then also suggested I go and do this meditation course, mindful meditation and doing science. And so anyway, finding an anchor, I was going to say this, it feels delicious to be a crazy artist, but especially in a situation where when you have to walk into a room and you have to, it's also a business, like be the business person.
Right.
I needed tools to like calm myself.
That seems like a no-brainer. You know what I mean? It's like, but nobody tells you those things.
That's right.
Nobody gives you kind of an edge of like, oh, this is what you need. You need to know when you walk into any room, there's nothing to prove. And that's a weird thing.
Yeah.
You walk into any room, even socially, and there's always this like need of like, oh, I need to assert myself. But it's like, I'm sure you feel this. I definitely feel this as I get older. I'm like, oh, none of that matters. Like, all that matters is that I'm having fun and I want to be in this skin that I'm at. I want to be in this skin that I'm in. And
that's right.
That's all that is. So tell me how you kind of started peeling the layers to get to that place.
Yeah, I mean, I think age and time. I think having a kid. Everyone's like, oh, I'm like, go have a baby. Whatever, go find one. I don't know. No, kidding. But having a kid, I think it really put in perspective, like, what the heck is actually, like, really, really important. Obviously, you know, I was married. I'm close to my family. These things are important. But there's something about, like, I have to raise this kid to be a wonderful contributing member of society. And for me, what that looked like was, yeah, I don't know. I guess, like you said, peeling back the layers and understanding that I am enough. And I always want her to know that, like, I am enough. But I, in order to raise her to be the strong, confident, amazing, she's a musical theater baby.
Oh, by the way, she's incredible. That's awesome.
I know. I know she's better. She's more talented than I was at that age, but that's okay. That's fine. That's the way it's supposed to be, because I had access and understanding that my parents didn't, you know? So in order to like raise this whole healthy person, first of all, it just puts in perspective, like, I have to keep this child alive. Like, let's not kill the kid. And then second of all, in order to like infuse a whole being, I had to be whole within myself. I just, again, through meditation, through therapy, it's like, how can I actually fill someone else's cup if my cup's empty? It was dry as a bone, Nikki. I had an opportunity. I had a callback for this Parker Posey. Jennifer. It doesn't matter. This indie thing. They came up to Seattle, and I went into a room, and I'd been given sides from my then agent that were the wrong sides. And instead of being like, "Hey guys, I have the wrong sides," because at that point I just didn't have the confidence to be like, "You know what? Art is messy, and we're gonna figure it out. And I'm gonna hold my sides, and this is what it is." So circling back, like, I screwed the pooch. I had 7 people, because this was back when 7 people were in a room. They flew everyone up to Seattle, and they're all staring at me like, this girl is awful. Again, no shade. I flamed out like in real time in front of these people. But circle back to Megan One, I had the same experience where I was looking at the wrong sides. Shout out to Miranda Rivers, my gal, who is an incredible casting director in New Zealand. Had told my agent, have her call me and we can discuss this. And I thought she meant, because I was shooting something else, I thought I wasn't going to be able to come to the callback. And she said, just have her call me. And I'm like, oh, I guess I don't have to call her because I'm going to come in person. And I show up, she's like, you were supposed to call me. And I'm like, huh? And I'm looking at the sides, I'm like, these aren't the right sides. So we walk into the room, Gerard said, I'm like, hey, guy, hi, you know. And then we're like having this like tete-a-tete in the corner, like, I don't know, I have the wrong size. I told you to call me. Da-da-da. And Gerard's like, wait, what's going on here? You know, I can't do a Kiwi accent. No, I can't. Let me not embarrass myself. I'll leave that to Brian. Brian's got the, you know, those accents down. But he's like, what's going on? And I said, I just have the wrong sides. I don't know, you know. And he goes, just do those. Just hold your sides and just do those. I was like, all right. And so I had relinquished. I just had fun because I was like, well, he thinks I'm an idiot. We're just going to go for this. And I just had a good time. And I'd already done the work on who Tess the character was anyway. Right. So it doesn't actually matter what the words are. I know how to like scoop and read, like if I have to look at my sides. And I left there actually feeling great. Like, well, it is what it is. We chuckled. I left. I saw my really good friend coming back, going in. I'm like, oh, she's got this in the bag. And 5 weeks later, I got a call from my agent, like, how would you like to work with Allison Williams? And I was like, huh?
Awesome.
And so there was something in the mess that made it really compelling. And there was something in freeing myself from the constraints of being perfect that allowed me to just be fine with it.
But I think it's also,
actually, you know,
I think you had been in.
Yes, totally. I'd already been doing stuff. You're right.
Care. Because I mean, that is.
You're right.
That moment was. I played the Apollo Theater, and
of course you did.
And you know what's crazy though? It's like everybody's like, "Oh, what was it like?" And this is what I thought. It's like I was the only guy from LA, and I had 2 stage people. Like, what do you need? Like, I just need my amp turned on. Just make sure my amp was turned on. And they're like, and the amp was on at soundcheck. They didn't have to do anything.
Oh God, no.
So what's crazy is, so I go out there, and the comedian's like, "Hey, what's your name?" And I said, "Nikhil."
Yeah.
Nikhil Karula? I said, Nikhil Karula. He goes out to the crowd, and this is how he announced me. He says, ladies and gentlemen, Nikaka Kabuka. And I was like, what?
So no.
I'm rubbing the log, and I go to my amp, and my amp is off, and all my controls have been changed. And I was like, So, like, well, it was cool, though. I was like, in the moment, I was like, oh, this is respect. Like, they're trying to mess with my performance.
Because I'm
LA, and I, you know, this is Harlem, and I could feel the crowd behind about to boo me off the stage. And so the band was playing, we were playing a Michael Jackson tune. And in that moment, I was like, I've been in this place before. I've been in things that weren't going to work out. So I just turned around and said, clap your hands, stomp your feet. This one's for Michael Jackson. And the whole place went from about to boo to like, you know, like, creating this amazing momentum.
But I would
have been able to do that 5 years before. It was years of like seasoning, like you walked.
Yes.
All those auditions that you did that you didn't.
That's
get,
right.
You were like, I'm really hopeful for this, that something changes, and you're like, I'm just gonna have fun with this. And
that's when right.
You see that they're like, I want her in my movie because that energy.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. That's what you want to work with. You want to work with people that are fun, that are gonna be able to turn on a dime because, as you know, films. They are scripted to a point, but there's always things that you have
yes.
to do the time. And if you're not going to be able to be fun and just roll with the punches,
that's right.
You're going to be right. difficult. You're going to be a difficult cast member.
So yes.
That's what people can see. It's like.
That's true. I didn't think. That's right. The season. I like seasoning.
It's the best. It's the best. But I mean, I don't think we would have known that early on in our careers because we see those early disappointments is like, this wasn't good enough. But it's like, no. It's just preparing you for that thing that you're ready for later. So I love that you have that moment where you're like, and did you think the audition when you walked out, you didn't think you were going to get it? And then So when you got that phone call, were you like, what? I'm surprised.
I was on vacation with the family. Wow. We were in Rotorua. Anyway, we were having brunch at this place and I can see it, but now I'm like, which there's two cafes that look, it doesn't matter. And I just get this call and I'm like, you're freaking kidding me. Because, you know, I really, you know, I respect the work Allison's done. I mean, Blumhouse brought us Get Out, which has changed, you know, as part of the zeitgeist of like horror and just film in general. Like it was life changing for me in so many ways. And to be able to be like, I'm going to work with Allison, and she was in Girls, which when I lived in New York, I'm like, that was totally my life. It wasn't, honey. It was not that cool. I didn't have a trail of men following me, none of that. And so that was just so exciting. But when I got to set, I told them, like, I'm having serious imposter syndrome, you know, because I had heard through the grapevine that like actually I was replacing someone, which has actually turned out not to be true. But again, I wasn't seasoned enough to understand even then that like, actually, even I thank God somebody got like, let me send her flowers for not coming, you know, and actually instead being like, oh, I'm filling someone's big shoes and what a compliment that is. I start to shrink. But I learned so much from watching Allison on set, like how a number one acts and like how they interact with. And actually, Kim Crossman showed me that, too. Kim Crossman's like a really big New Zealand actor, really great, really funny. And I'd watched her on a rom-com. I had a small role on a rom-com she did here. And watching how she interacted with people, just being your genuine self and being kind and not having walls up with anyone. Right. That's what I want. I always want to work with kind people. Anyway, so there was a moment where we had done a take of something and I didn't get it. Again, I'm not a vain actor. I'm not doing stuff to serve myself. I'm here to serve the story. I'm here to serve the character. So if I'm asking for another take, it's not because I looked crazy. I don't even watch playback. I don't watch the dailies. I don't want to see it because I'm going to focus on the wrong stuff. You know, I'm trusting the director and the DP and the editors to hold my hand and do that part of the craft. Anyway, but in this particular scene, there was playback that was happening. And when we were doing other, you know, the wide shot, I was like, oh, that's really great. And then Brian did his. And when I did mine, they didn't do playback. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was just telling Allison, I'm like, I want to go again just because I feel like we can add something to that. Because there was some emotional depth I needed to be able to hear Amy and Violet. Anyway, so she just stopped. She's like, just say something. I'm like, no. She's like, just say something. Like, I'm thinking, you're number one. Of course you can say something. And she's like, hey guys, Jen needs another take with playback. If that's okay. And you know, Gerard's awesome. Was like, yeah, if you, and I'm like, sorry. And we did it. And they were like, actually, that was great. We needed that. Like little bits of emotion to be able to cut into. And so trusting that, like,
instincts.
Again, that seasoning instincts. And especially if they're being motivated, not for selfish purpose, really for the collaboration, the collaborative effort, like, there's nothing wrong with that. And actually, part of it was being afraid of no. I'm not afraid of no anymore.
Right.
That was, right? Because, like, You know what I'm saying? Like, for you, I'm sure, like, ask.
You have nothing to lose. Wipe off a no, like, okay, no problem. That was, you know, but it would have eaten at you if you didn't voice that question. Can we do another take?
Exactly.
We're left thinking, I didn't get the thing out there that I wanted to. And instead,
that's right.
You voiced it and it turned into, you know, you're part of the ensemble. So it's like,
yeah.
Look at, like, oh, if you have a suggestion, the creative team should be like, you're a valued part of the team. So you're probably going to add value. Let's see if we can do this again. And that's
right.
Also what makes a great director too. It's like,
A
director that's like not open to that, it makes kind of shitty films. You know, it's like, open to the ensemble chiming in because it's like, you're
that's
in
right.
effort and you can always cut it later, but you have to have it to know what
that's you're
right. around. You know what I mean? So that was
great
for you to know that because most people would probably shrink in that moment and not ask for that take, you know?
Well, it's only because Allison held my hand. So I guess to all you young actors out there who, you know, we always live and die by the no. We live and die by, like, the audition now and the no we have received, but it's actually putting in coins for later. Like, your audition today has nothing to do with today. It actually has to do with tomorrow because there's so many factors that, again, it is a business. And as creatives, we just want everything to be juicy and beautiful and with the fairies, but there is money involved because you can go and act doing community theater and feel fulfilled, right? But if this is going to be your business, it's a, I don't know if I can curse. It's a freaking business. Sorry. Okay. I was like, oh, it's a fucking business, you know, and we forget that. And so, you know, there's too much at play. There's things where I'm like, I'm too much like the lead. Of course, they're not going to cast me. You know, X, Y, and Z could be, we like her, not the right vibe. Again, learning not to take that as a personal hit to you as a human. Yeah. It does not devalue you as a human. It just doesn't fit the story or the money people's idea of what they what they need.
Yes.
To make dough.
Which is also never. The way I think you should make art is not that. You know, it's like,
no.
I think it's like the best art just rises because it was
that's right.
a lot of those things. You know what I mean? So it's hard. It's hard. Art and commerce, I'm always thinking about those two. But
I know.
You can't chase one for the other because you're going to lose
I know.
Other, you know, so
that's right.
Great art is kind of like not thinking about the commerce and then it creates commerce because it's great art, you know? So
yeah.
I think great art creates great commerce, but we forget
that's that. That's right. Hello, sinners.
That's right. I know. And that came out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere, and everybody talked about it, and it just blew up, and it's an amazing, an original idea that...
Yes.
Something
that... With beautiful music. Did you love it? Look for the music. I mean...
I loved it. And that little scene with Buddy Guy at the end, it was just like...
Yeah.
It was like a perfect nod to the...
Yeah.
I want to play your actor reel first, and then
we'll
This is Jen's acting reel. Here we go.
Okay, let's see. I was like, "What are we?" Oh yeah.
See why you don't want to meet her?
Of course, I want to meet her. I think about her a lot, but things are too complicated right now.
What do you want me to tell her?
You should go.
Well, you gotta answer me. What do I tell her?
I don't
what
know. Do I don't her? Know. You can't just show up out of nowhere. That's on you.
I loved this character.
A good time in my life. But maybe we can.
I love this character.
You really hate your brief stint at motherhood that much?
Stop.
Or do you hate me so much that you're willing to hurt your daughter?
Oh, she's John. I love you, John. I can't wait to work with him again.
I'm sorry. You want me to be that makes two of us.
Goodbye.
I don't have time for you to figure your shit out.
What does that mean?
You're her only family.
He's such an icon. Such
other than me.
Hi.
Oh. Hello.
Oh, we're just rolling the whole thing, huh, guys?
Hello, this is Caroline.
We're doing the whole thing. This was fun. This is Mr. Corman with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's show that had one season.
Yeah.
I forget.
This was fun. It was just, you know, this one was a little thing I popped into.
But she was showing me this thing that she learned in dance, and it's actually really helpful.
I was
He wanted me to go to the hot tub because he doesn't have a heating pad.
And it works. I was hoping that a second season would come and I could just come back as the girlfriend, but, you know, there was no second season. What can you say?
Actually, that looks kind of nice.
Come on.
Hop on.
It's good for you back.
Oh my God, this is so funny. I can't. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize we're playing the whole reel. Oh, Lord Jesus.
So, how long have you known Josh?
Oh my God, my feet. Don't look at my toes, people. I have terrible toes.
That's all right.
Are you going to keep texting?
Oh, honestly, probably not. Sorry, I'm just like watching this because it's like a fun thing to watch things you're proud of, you know? Like,
so the sex was
bad. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that was fun.
You think you've got to be.
Oh, I loved this one. So this one was great because, like, I. This show, One Lane Bridge, and that's my buddy Dom. That's my buddy and my girl Phoebe. And
but my client Caleb cannot own the vehicle in question. His
Dom's one, so it and that's Kieran.
At best and, lazy
and Kieran is an incredible actor. They, you know, like, and Dom is too. He's a New Zealand treasure.
On the night of Peter P. Williams' death, and the sworn affidavits from witnesses who will confirm his alibi.
This is in New Zealand?
This was in New Zealand, and what was fun about this was my first time where I was basically a series regular. This was cool.
It's your big game. I can't focus.
And what's wrong with my brain?
Is clearly upset about something.
So this one, I was playing the best friend who was getting married, and it's a meet cute, and it, you know, and yeah, it was really fun. And I actually
met
one of my really close friends, Tim, doing this, who's becoming a collaborator.
I saw them together yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, it was really.
And he said that they're getting back.
Does this one have the Megan clip on it?
Yes.
No. Oh, man.
I don't know if it does.
Wait, you think
that. Oh, shoot. My bad. I don't know which one I sent you guys. It's a hot mess. My computer was like, I literally had to go and get my
at least hard drive with him, let him know how you're feeling so that
saved
when he makes any decisions, he does it with all the information.
Oh, you do. We have okay, great.
Now go sort this out. Your dress. Oh,
this was
your
hair, fun.
I'll get it done. And if I have to be nice and conventionally late, who cares?
You know what's really funny is, do you hear this voice?
Now go.
They pitched all of our. They pitched my voice up.
Really?
Yeah. They pitched my voice up. Shout out to my. That's my New Zealand representation. I'm repped by.
Why did they do that?
Here we go.
Do you know? Did you ever ask them why they pitched your voice up?
No, I never realized it until I was watching, and I'm like, that sounds. What is happening here? You know, I was like, my voice is pitched up. I think it's to make it, not just me, everybody's voices were pitched up. I think it was just it's a rom-com. It's like Hallmark. It's just trying to make it like light and bubbly. And there's something about having a higher voice. My voice is not that deep, but hey, you know.
Well, you know what's interesting? It's like, I always marvel at what people think matters in moments. Because it wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered if it was just left alone. So
exactly.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, that's a weird decision that you made for a purpose, yet
it has
no effect on the actual outcome of the art. Why did you make that decision? You know,
it's weird.
It's weird. But you know, that's part of it. We're going to play the trailer for Megan next.
Okay, cool.
And we're going to play a scene after that. So here's the trailer for Megan.
Is this, I think, Megan 2.0? Let's see.
I think so.
How do I say
I'll admit, there were some bugs in my programming.
This music was such an amazing choice.
It's hardly fair to blame me for that.
I really love this movie. I really love this franchise. I'm so grateful to be a part of that.
I will do whatever it takes to protect Katie.
What a special little movie.
What the hell is this? You put me in this plastic Teletubby?
Prove you can be trusted, maybe we'll give you an upgrade.
Yeah. this was for Ms. number Forster, two.
We have a problem. We're hunting an autonomous android.
You can correct on Apple TV. Come on, come on. Come on, come on, babies.
How's this possible?
We deleted yeah. it.
Apparently,
it was Ivana.
Nothing in our arsenal can stop her.
Each of the people who rope. Haven't seen it.
She's killing anyone who's contributed to her creation.
And you and Katie are next. In the first one.
I know how to stop Amelia. She's getting more powerful. Soon she'll be the most dangerous weapon.
We see here as Amelia is an incredible.
Put me in a body and I'll help you stop her.
You remember she what happened last time. You threatened to rip out my tongue and put me in a wheelchair.
I was upset.
Look, she wants to help us.
Yeah, this trailer, it's a great trailer, like but it definitely doesn't amp how funny it is.
Do you prefer I gave you a printout that you can read at your own pace?
Yeah, I probably wanted to make
okay, Megan, time to give you an upgrade. Anything you'd like to add?
I want to be stronger, faster.
Watching people.
Hey, so remember the time I strangled you and set the lab on fire? I want you to know.
It's not people, that won't happen again.
Thank you so much.
And while you're at it, make me talk.
Oh, and Amy.
All right, meat sacks. Let's get to work.
Oh.
Well, look who came out to play.
I was programmed to protect Katie. The only question is, are you going to stand in my way?
So great.
Hold on to your vaginas.
I don't care if she did kill four people. She is a smoking hot warrior princess.
She's amazing.
I'll make
incredible.
You a deal. You can kill Gemma, but don't touch Katie.
Megan.
I'll say this, Ivana and Amy who is the physical embodiment of Megan, Jenna Davis is the voice, and then Ivana who plays Amelia, they did so much of their stunts. Our stunties did a lot, like all the really, like they were not going through glass, let's be honest, you know? But just shout out. I just love these people. Like I'm so grateful to have.
Must've been a fun set. Cause it's like, first of all, nobody's taking it to like this level of like, oh my God, this is so intense.
Right.
But it's right. fun intense. It's like, oh, this is a horror movie. When you know it's it's a horror movie, that's gotta make it more fun, right?
Yeah, and it's a very self-aware film. It's also very it's just fun. Like Megan 2 is so funny. Like, as I've said before, it is like the perfect popcorn muncher. Like you get your popcorn, you put your Raisinets. Okay. Maybe Raisinets are controversial. Put your Raisinets in there with the hot popcorn. You get your drink, you have a little sparkling water, a little whatever, glass of rosé. And you watch this shit is funny. Like, right. It's so funny because I think the box office didn't reflect that. And that it's hard. You know, opening against Brad Pitt is really hard, but that's fine.
This will be like a cult classic. You know what I mean?
It's totally.
Like some of my favorite movies, Scarface didn't do well in the box office. And it is a cult classic. So in the horror genre, this movie will be a cult classic because it's enough of like treading the line of seriousness and silliness. That's a really cool genre that's happening. Right
yeah.
now. Like,
yeah.
It's taking itself too seriously, but it's also
threading
the line where it's like, yo, it's gonna make you feel scared in moments. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to ask you, what was the prop that they used that wasn't like a robotic? Because you know some of it's CGI. What did they use?
For Amy.
Yes.
Okay, so in I'll talk about Megan 2 because in Megan 1 I really didn't interact with her as she was awake. You know, it was always me in the lab and her strapped to something, you know, until she tried to kill my ass. That's, you know, but aside from that, so basically there's, and shout out to Moreau, like their work is impeccable. You know, they won an Oscar for, Brendan Fraser's, suit, exactly. Anyway, so, there were a few dolls. You know, there was a posable doll that had no electronics in it, right? So she could just like sit there. There was a doll with an animatronic face. And than like opposable body. And so like the eyes could flick around and that kind of stuff. A little bit. Yeah, it was freaky. And then there would be one that could be puppeteered. So example, Kathy Moreau, would, or the, oh God, he's such a sweetheart. What's his name? Anyway, the puppeteers would like put their arms in it. Like there's this one scene where she puts a gun together and it's crazy because they have to do this and put the gun together without seeing, cause they're behind the doll. And it's like, you can't see, you just like feel it. And then you have to like put these, gosh, these earpiece keeps falling out. They're putting this stuff together. Anyway, so there's that version. There's a version that is, there's the mech Megan in Megan 2, which is so funny. She's basically a naked Megan down to the studs and she wheels in. So there's a lot of different, I'm just having weird pop-ups on my computer. Get out of here. Sorry. Live interviews. Hey, yeah, there's a lot of different, there were a lot of different dolls that I could interact with. And then of course we have Amy Donald, who embodies Megan. And so she would have all sorts of iterations. Sometimes she just had the wig on and a blue face for moments that need to be CGI'd, right? Sometimes she actually had the silicone face on with its eyes popped out, you know, with the eyes cut out so she could see. And then so she could see and dance and move and do the physical acting. And then sometimes I believe there was a mask with full on just a face, you know, eyeballs, the whole thing. And so shout out to Amy, never complained, always smiling, hot as hell in all these crazy suits, and just made it work, you know? And shout out to my dear Violet too. Watching these girls grow up, you know, like before my eyes, they were 9 and now they're teenagers, you know? It's kind of wild. I'm like proud auntie, you know? And Violet's career.
You know what I mean? Like
when no!
It's, and they're probably like, all right, don't complain. This is what it is.
And that's they never, and that's the thing, right? With kid actors, I have some friends that are like, oh, my kid. And they said, listen, you don't have to be, we don't need you to be cute. You have to be pretty good actor. But the thing you need to do the most or the best is you need to listen and need to be able to respond and be fine with adults. And then it's a bonus when someone like Violet is also happens to be an incredible actor who will just turn on the tears. Her parents, the McGraw family, is incredible. Like, she's such a well-balanced, whole, genuinely kind kid. Same with Amy. And that comes from the parents, you know?
Important.
It's so important. But then I'm also like, how do you have this emotional depth? You've had such a beautiful life. Like, how can you cry like that on demand? It's insane.
You know what? It sounds like the cast was just, like, a cool hang. Like, everybody was just...
Such a cool hang.
Hang whenever it was just... You know what it needed. So great. Yeah, that's important. But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, makes it fun. So like, oh, sorry, I'm gonna just say one more thing about the cast. So on Megan 2, the first Megan, there was only 3 of us adults really that were always there, part of the ensemble. And on this one, it was just so fun because we brought in Ivana as Amelia, Aristotle as why is my brain blanking on Aristotle and Fari as. Gosh. Anyway, whatever. My brain is just, and then Tim Sharp, and having these guys fill out our kind of like adult collective was so awesome. And they just brought a different energy and they're all incredible actors. And we honestly hung out. It was just so nice. I loved it. Anyway, sorry. I just want to shout out.
Awesome.
Shout out my Megan 2 homies.
Yeah. Let's play a scene. Here's a scene from Megan 2.0.
Ooh. Oh, this is from the first Megan.
Why are we doing this?
Because first
we
Megan.
Have to.
If we could at least show him what we have.
No. He would... You said so yourself. Not until she's ready.
Allison and BGA.
Your silence indicates what? I'm not sure. About what?
Oh, so this scene, there's a really interesting thing about this scene. Maybe, I don't know, should I tell you after or do you want me to tell you right now as it's rolling? So in this scene, you know, when I first did it, because Tess is like holding Gemma's toes to the fire and Jen as a human would be like, bitch, get it together. You know, like whatever you're doing is not okay. No, I like to be upfront with my friends in a kind way. It wouldn't have been quite like that. But I was infusing that onto Tess. And so I just remember, I remember the producers were, first year I was like, no, I need it to be like, I don't even know, X, Y, and Z. And I was like, I don't understand. And then there was a moment where I was like, I feel like a bad actor. I can't give them what they need. And Adam Hendricks and Judson, who are on the ground producers, the best. If you ever have an opportunity to work with them, do. They are such kind, wonderful film nerds that know everything about film, but also really take care of you. Anyway, they stepped in, Adam stepped in and explained to me what that scene also required. And it just clicked and made sense. And that was also a seasoning moment. I love, I'm stealing that from you, Nikki. That was also a seasoning moment of like, actually, it's okay to make mistakes in real time. How can you switch your brain? I didn't cry, I wanted to cry. And him just dropping in a little bit of knowledge helped me to correct the course and get what we needed, you know?
What's cool is the chemistry between you and Brian, too.
Oh, this is great. Oh, yeah, this scene. I just love Brian. And I think now I could do a little bit more play. Brian doesn't love a lot of extra ad-libbing. I think his words are so tight. I can't blame him. You know? It's comedy. There are certain beats. Yes. This was fun. I love this one because, spoiler alert, listen, Megan's been a few years if you haven't seen it, too bad. We do not.
So, in that scene,
that was awesome.
Megan lights something. What did she just
pass
on? But what did she actually light? They didn't show that.
Oh, you know what? I think there was cans of propane or something.
Okay, all right. Because it didn't show that. It just showed
materials,
and then it didn't show her doing anything, and then it just had you guys like in a dangerous situation. But it was awesome. I mean,
yes, yeah.
What was the situation when nothing blew up in that moment? I assume that's all CGI. No. So
it wasn't CGI. Hold on. So listen to this. So actually the there was an actual detonation. We were not in the room. So we did that scene. And then later, which I missed, I was like, someone tell me when I don't know why it was in my trip. I don't know. It's like, someone tell me, I want to watch this, the detonation of whatever the hell they blew up in real life. I don't know. But they blew up the studio. And it was one take. Thank God. Because if we hadn't gotten one take, would have been nothing to shoot. Then we would have had to CGI the bejesus out of it. So
it would have made it a very expensive situation. You'd have to get that.
Yes.
Like, that's crazy. That's the part of filmmaking. I think people don't understand how integral those scenes are and how important
yes. it
is to have it all line up correctly and have it.
That's made. Right.
So it's a gnarly thing. Is there going to be a Megan 3.0?
I hope so.
There should be. Different director will take it on and be like, you know what?
Yeah.
Thing, because it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Chucky like made a thing and then it became like all these sequels.
Because, that's right.
You know, they saw it as, oh, just like keep building on it because
more
kind of like folklore we can add to it.
That's right.
The first, second, third ones become.
That's right.
They're on like a Chucky 5 or 6. So
I know.
Surprised if you get that call.
And then here's the thing. I think so. The second one I will say is more thriller comedy. There's a little bit less of the horror. It's still a really great film. It was fun at the premiere. There's a gal that brought her Annabelle doll. So they're like serious horror fans. And I was like, so did you? I just have to ask because you're horror fans. Like it's less horror. Like how did you feel? And they're like, yeah, it was less horror, but we loved it. So people are really enjoying it and people are really like, it's fun. And I wouldn't be saying that because I'd look like a fool if it wasn't actually good. I would look like, I don't know what I would look like.
Did it come out in New Zealand at the same time or did it add a little bit of stagger?
It did. And it wasn't out long enough because I had friends that were like, I went to go see it and it was gone. I'm like, oh, well, I'm like, rent it on. Rent VOD, honey. Rent it.
You know the weird thing, and I know you know this because
what? Tell me.
Movies every week, but it's hard for people to get to the movies these days. Because
that's so right.
So it's like most people are going to actually consume it, unfortunately, watching it on their phone, watching it on their computer, watching it on their laptop, watching it on their TV. And that's the trend that everything that's happening. So it's like, it's a bummer because I still love going to see movies and movies.
Me too. So
it's weird to see that because like,
I know.
Loving going to the movies and different things. So I wouldn't look at box office numbers or even like the fact that how long it stayed, because there are hit movies that are being booted out of theaters.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
So that's right. Like, yeah.
Part of it. There's just so much coming.
I know.
So it's just part of what it is. But did you think the premiere in New Zealand or no?
Not the New Zealand one, because I was already in New York doing the New York premiere, which was awesome. So they flew me out and I did that. And then, it was great. It was so hot. Oh my God. Like, it was so hot, and it was kind of a bummer because they had to tent it to keep it cool, because we were literally melting, like sweat coming down my legs. Like, it was crazy. So, we didn't get all the fans watching and all that stuff. Like, the LA premiere was so special. It was my first red carpet experience. Wow. And there were fans out, and like, it's in my hometown at the Grauman. Like, come on, the Grauman Chinese Theater. I don't remember what it's called now. I don't know, but it's always...
But it's always Grauman's to me. I said
that's right. Thank you. I was like, I don't know what it's called now, but the Grauman Chinese Theater, like, it was such an iconic way to have my first red carpet premiere. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, that was incredible. This one was incredible too, but it was so hot. It was a lot.
Do you know what the budget was for the movie?
I know it was double the first one. I think this budget was, $22 or something like that. $22 million.
That's actually pretty reasonable.
Cool. Yeah, it's not bad. So the first one, it was like double the first one. So that the first one, we made $180 million off of a $15 million. Yeah, crazy. And so I think the expectation, I think that's what's hard. The expectation was that we would do that. Different time. And also, it is hard to go against a big blockbuster, F1.
Yeah, that was...
And that's hard, because now, economically, it's expensive. You know, when we were younger, you could hit three movies, and it wasn't that much money. Now, it's $50 just to show up, right? And so, you are going to only choose, even myself, like, you're going to choose one. That's why I watch daytime movies and go on, like, the Tuesday cheapos, because it's like, you can actually... afford that. But obviously us in art, our schedules are malleable, whereas like the 9-to-5ers, you have no choice but to go on the hot time. So I definitely don't take offense to that, but it was hard to see. Because
like art is consumed in layers, and it's like, John Batiste said something like this, and I was like, yes, this is right on the money. He said, art will find you at the right time. So like, I'm like that with music. I'm like that with TV shows. It's never like, oh, it hits right away. It's always like, I'm gonna get mine where it's like, oh, I'm going to take this in as it comes. So don't worry about how that works. It's like, a way huge marketing budget, like an F1. Right. And even that, I mean, just to give you an idea, Mission Impossible lost $300 million.
That's wild.
That's Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Infrastructure. So, like, if that movie is not making money, every movie.
It's hard. Just does. Yeah, exactly.
Like, weird time for movies. But
it is weird.
Jen, what's next for you? And where can people find you?
What's next? It's actually kind of exciting. I'm moving into this new phase of collaboration and writing. Also, there is this director, Ian Sweeney, that I've worked with, there's a couple projects that has in the pipeline, one of which a pilot that I really want someone to read. If you're if you have money out there, LA, do you hear me? And you like Severance and you like these kind of like, hit me up. Have I got a series for you? It's one of the best pilots I've read. So find me, reach out to Echo Lake Management.
Where can people find you on Instagram or?
Instagram, Jen Van Epps at, with Jen Van Epps. That's it. I have a private one, but that's just for the homies.
Okay.
All right. I don't know if you're my private one. I gotta find you. And then also, I'm starting to write something with some friends. I shot something in Melbourne, and I'm now gonna be writing. I can't believe it. Anyway.
No, No, that's what it should be. It should be.
Last thing. I'm doing a thing called Send Jen Scripts. Send Jen Scenes at gmail.com. If you have a scene you want me to work on, send it to me. I will tape it for you.
That's awesome.
Fun.
Well, I'm going to have to send you a scene then. That's how that's
going to work. You don't have to be a writer. Literally, if you write it on a piece, like a cocktail napkin, my friend Tim and I and whatever other amazing actors I can rope in, we are going to do it. Right now, it is just self-tape style, but I have one I have to pop up that I'm trying to finish editing, but my computer is failing, so that's okay.
I love that. And Jen, you know, the first thing I saw you do was a McDonald's commercial, and it was like,
oh my God, yes!
Now I'm seeing you in
the McDonald's.
Yep. But I mean, it's cool. Now you're doing major motion pictures. It's like,
it's crazy.
I can't wait to see what you're going to do next. We want to bring
you back
about 9 or 10 months.
Anytime.
We'll schedule this again. But
oh my God, please.
Thanks for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. This has been so awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Nikki. You're such... I mean, honestly, like I find you very inspiring because you are a person that I knew. Yeah. A person that I personally knew from high school, and to watch you have a career in the arts that has helped you to sustain and live. It's great.
Cool. You know what? And it's like all artists out there. It's like, it's all peaks and valleys. There's always,
right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I just finished a record with Tony Levin which is amazing because he's played with John Lennon and David Bowie,
yeah.
And Gabriel, and it's like already, even though the record's out, or it hasn't been, it's not out yet, but it's out in 2 weeks. But even though it's done, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, what's next? Because that is the art. Like, as soon as you finish, you're like, oh, okay, what's the next thing?
That's right.
A part of it, and it's like, I think you just will keep on bouncing around. I'll do as artist to find the next thing, and I hope sometime we can collaborate on something. That would be amazing.
That'd be awesome.
Maybe Megan 3.0.
You know what? We need a song of yours in it.
I'm ready. I'll write something.
Yeah, you should. That would be rad. And we are in the marathon. One last thing to all you people that think like people are overnight successes because you've never seen them. No.
Nope.
It's been, as I'm stealing from Nikki, years of seasoning. So don't give up the ghost because it hasn't happened instantaneously. Amazon is for instantaneous. Your career is not.
I love that. Believe in the slow burn, people.
Yes, baby.
That's it. Jen, it's always a pleasure.
Yes.
Love connecting.
Thank you.
You're the best. On behalf of Jen, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Check out Megan 2.0.
It'll scare
you. It'll make you smile. It'll entertain you. And that's what it's all about. All right?
Yeah.
Love and hair grease. We'll see you guys next week.
Woo!
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence right here on LA Talk Radio.